Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If your employer sends you an email telling you to, quote, get that money, you probably work in sales, right? Maybe you're a real estate agent. But what if I told you I'm talking about an email that went out to doctors? NBC News financial reporter Gretchen Morgenson heard about this a few years ago.
My background is on Wall Street, and this all sounded very familiar to me, you know, about encouraging people to make sales, you know, to make a quota, you know, at the end of the month or something. That's a very Wall Street thing to do.
The email was shared with Gretchen by a dermatologist in Michigan named Allison Brown. Dr. Brown's office had recently been bought out by a private equity firm, and the firm was pushing doctors to book more patients to meet budget goals, offering up bonuses if they succeeded. The effort to juice sales was part of a larger shift in care that Dr. Brown noticed once private equity took over.
She had had to see so many more patients every day, and she didn't have the adequate support staff to see those patients. She also described cases of patients seen multiple times for a problem that could have been resolved in a single visit. Now, that, of course, raises those patients' costs.
But this isn't just happening in Dr. Brown's former office in Michigan, or just in dermatology. Around the country, private equity is buying up doctors' offices, clinics, and hospitals, hoping to turn a profit in an industry where the stakes are literally life or death.
My reporting has found that 40% of emergency departments in hospitals are run by private equity staffing companies. 11% of nursing homes are owned by private equity. And that is probably a low number because there are sort of hidden ownership of nursing homes, the way they're structured. 9% of anesthesiologists are owned by private equity. 8% of hospitals across the country are owned by private equity. So it has been a full-on assault of the industry.
And what worries you about this? Just the way you're talking right now, it makes me think, oh, I should be very afraid. I should be very worried about this, about these numbers and about private equity taking over all these medical practices. Why?
There are a couple of reasons, Emily. One is that patient costs go up. But the most important aspect of it is the care that these patients receive. If your first interest is profits, if your primary interest is profits, your primary interest is not patient care. It's in generating higher revenues from the business of patient care. And so that is really the crux of the problem.
So today on the show, private equity has a prescription for the future of healthcare, and it has some gnarly side effects. I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about tech, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Private equity is one of those finance terms that people recognize but might not totally understand. It's a shorthand way of referring to private businesses that buy other companies with a goal of improving their financials by cutting costs and increasing efficiency. The firm's ultimate goal is to sell the company in question or take it public for more money than it initially spent. In some cases, like healthcare, a PE firm will buy up a bunch of businesses of one type, so it can share resources, like say, buy 20 individual dentist offices and cluster them all in one system to manage like billing, scheduling, and insurance.
So it's not like it's, you know, fancy. There's nothing sort of, you know, unique about it. It's just companies that take over other companies, use a lot of debt to do so, and then want to sell those companies within 5 to 7 years at a profit.
When did private equity first start getting involved in healthcare?
It started getting involved in like 2005 and 2006, that area. And that is because healthcare is 18% of gross domestic product in this country. And that is a huge money tap that these people and these companies can tap into.
So what do the private equity firms say their goal is here? I mean, I know their goal is turning a profit, but what pitch are they making when they're looking to acquire, you know, healthcare companies or practices?
Well, they will say that they're making these operations more efficient. That's their biggest claim. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is inefficiency in healthcare, of course. We see it ourselves when we go to the hospital. So it makes sense. It's kind of tracks. You say to yourself, okay, yeah, there's probably a lot of fat that could be cut. And then maybe this operation could be more, you know, lean and more efficient. But what they don't say is that making it more lean and more efficient generally means firing workers who are the very reason that good healthcare happens. Okay, there is a direct correlation between staffing in a hospital and good patient outcomes. But if you've got to cut costs because you're carrying a heavy debt load, your first cost, your biggest cost, is your employment, your employees, your payroll. And so those people get cut and the patients end up suffering.
Another thing they do to cut costs isn't merely they cut staff. They bring in, I believe you call them physician extenders, like nurse practitioners and physician assistants, to do the work that you would expect doctors to do. And that causes problems as well, right?
Absolutely. So when a private equity firm buys a physician practice, they do a couple of things pretty quickly. One is they schedule more patient visits. Dramatically more. They hire what's called physician extenders. These are non-doctors to do more of the work, to see the patients, to do more of the clinical work. They're lower cost employees, so that's crucial. That's why they do so. And then you're going to also see, according to the research, increased numbers of tests given to patients, which increases their costs. In fact, in dermatology, going back to Dr. Brown, there was actually a 2018 Journal of the American Medical Association research that examined 33,000 skin cancer screenings among 20,000 patients. and it found that physician extenders had failed to identify cancers significantly more often than doctors did. But the extenders also ordered more biopsies, which generate increased fees for patients. So yeah, there are other things that they do. I know that Dr. Brown also told me that the quality of the instruments that they were supposed to use in the clinic declined after the private equity owner came in. So, you know, it's cutting corners wherever you can.
It can be hard to prove that a specific situation or issue at a doctor's office or hospital was directly caused by a private equity acquisition, but studies have shown that cutting those corners can have a real detrimental effect on patients.
One of the most shocking and frightening academic studies that has come out recently on private equity in healthcare was done by academics at the University of Chicago, NYU, and UPenn, and it studied nursing homes owned by private equity over a long period, 14 years. And what they found was that there were 10% more deaths at nursing homes run by private equity than at nursing homes not run by private equity. 10% more mortality, which translated over that time to 20,000 lives. So I spoke with one of the academics who'd done the work. I said, well, so what did you determine was the reason for this 10% greater mortality rate? And she said, lack of staffing. It's that simple. And so when you have a business model that requires you to cut costs, in healthcare, it doesn't work. Not for the patient anyway. You know, there was just a couple of weeks ago, Harvard and I think the University of Chicago put out a study about what happens at hospitals that are owned by private equity. They found that after the acquisition, they found a spike in patient falls, a spike in patient infections. So, I mean, you're talking about patient care, you're talking about health, you're talking about life and death here. It's really scary.
I recently had an orthopedist appointment at a new practice, and I went there, and it was very efficient to get an appointment and all this. And I went in with a problem in my hip, and I wasn't seen by a doctor at all. I came in, they sent me right to X-ray without talking to anyone to take the X-ray. And then after that, I spoke to a physician assistant, no doctor. She made a diagnosis. I followed up with a physical therapist. He said, I really think this diagnosis is wrong. And, you know, he explained why. And, you know, X-rays can show a lot of things that aren't actually a problem. They just show up on scans. And, you know, you need a better diagnosis to figure things out. And so as I'm preparing to talk to you, you know, I look up the practice and what do you know? It's affiliated with private equity firm.
Oh, my gosh. Look at you. You're being an investigative reporter.
Yeah, but it really brought home for me, you know, the whole experience was so bizarre and it felt kind of factory-like. I wonder if that's the experience of other, you know, patients. And I wonder what doctors think about that.
Well, doctors are extremely upset about it because they are being asked, required to do things that they would not otherwise want to do. And there was a case where in an emergency department in an HCA hospital, this emergency department physician was working in this medical center, and they had a code blue policy that was troubling to him. The code blue policy in the hospital required that whomever was the emergency department physician on duty would have to also be available for code blues elsewhere in the hospital. Now, a code blue is when there's a life-threatening situation mm-hmm. in a patient. And you need, you know, immediate attention. So this doctor, his name was Ray Bravant, he raised his hand and he said, look, the rule says I have to be here in the emergency department ready to respond to a code blue here all the time, 24/7. I can't also go to the pediatric ward or the oncology ward or whatever to respond to a code blue. I can't be in two places at once. And So he raised his hand. He got all of his fellow physicians to sign on that we wanted this changed. We want this changed. He was working for a private equity-backed staffing company. And they didn't like the fact that he was making noise. And he kept making noise. And finally, they fired him. And not only did they fire him, they barred him from working for any other hospital in the region that was also staffed by the private equity staffing company. And so doctors are victims here too, but really it's about the patient. And your experience is very common. I have heard from so many people.
The quality of care is just one part of the equation here. There's another frightening aspect, the medical bills.
So one of the key aspects of private equity and healthcare that really, really sort of educated a lot of people was the surprise medical bills. It was so outrageous that our dysfunctional Congress actually did something about it. What it was if you went to the emergency department in your town, you go there, you think, because it's your hospital in your town, you think it's going to be covered by your insurance where you've been before, you know, with that hospital. What a private equity staffing company figured out how to do was to carve out from the insurance coverage the emergency department. So the emergency department was no longer included in the coverage of the hospital. It was a separate entity run by separate doctors, and so they could bill additionally. And people started having these thousands of dollars of bills. And it was all because of this money grab that had been devised by a private equity company. And it was fascinating because, first of all, it took Yale University a major study by them to identify it. But then when it came time for Congress to act, you actually had people on both sides of the aisle so outraged by this practice. Everyone was so outraged that they said, okay, this has got to stop. And they did curb it. But that is what we're talking about. That's what happens when private equity is involved in healthcare. It's all about the money. Get that money, as Alison Brown was told.
When we come back, why your doctor might hand their practice over to private equity in the first place.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier, and it could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, even hitting the home gym. Yep. Your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who save with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
What is the one most important thing our society needs?
That would be harsher punishment for parole violators, Stan. And world peace.
Okay, we get it. World peace might seem like a pipe dream. But what if I told you it's not? 2024 will see more than 50 elections around the world. And in some places, peace is actually on the ballot. One reason is because countries in Europe and Latin America have been experimenting with this thing called feminist foreign policy. Because right now, the way that we wage war and peace, it's kind of a boys' club. The new season of Things That Go Boom from Inkstick Media and PRX is coming March 18th. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
So, I mean, it's all about the money. I'm assuming, doctors don't become doctors because of money alone. I mean, why are these private practices and hospitals, why are they choosing to sell to private equity?
Well, there are basically two questions. One is, why would a physician practice sell to private equity? And that's kind of a simple answer. And that is, often these practices have been around for a long time. The physician who runs it and owns it is an older person looking to retire, you know, or is ready to move on. Okay. But, you know, what happens is the people who are left behind, like the Alison Browns of the world, younger physicians who now have to deal with this, they're the ones who are really being victimized by it. So a lot of doctors sell out because they think that this is, you know, their payday for, and I'm not saying they're greedy, but just their payment for establishing this practice and doing a good job over all these years.
So one thing I've read is that one of the reasons doctors wind up selling to private equity is because they're sort of fed up with managing insurance administration in their practices, that it's become so onerous and they just want to get that off their hands. And private equity is one of their selling points is, you know, we can take that off your hands. Is that right?
Yeah, no, you see this constantly. People that I've spoken to, the doctors say, yes, they came in and they said to us, we can handle all your back office, all your administrative duties, no problem at all. And, you know, you'll just be free to talk with your patients. You'll be hands free, not hands tied by doing all the administrative work. And so that's a key reason why there is a huge problem with doctor burnout right now, where they're, you know, forced to do insurance approvals and they're dealing with denials. And, you know, it's really a tough road to hoe. It's certainly not glamorous. And these guys and gals did not go into this, you know, to be administrators. They went into this to help people.
So Gretchen, I mean, consolidation's been going on in the healthcare industry for a while. Outside of private equity, there are these like big hospital groups buying up more and more practices. Would some of this be going on no matter who was running these hospitals? I have a doctor group where I live too that's owned by a big healthcare company, and their service is, you know, it's not great.
I'm not surprised. You know, healthcare in the United States is broken. It is so broken, and we spend 18% of gross domestic product on healthcare, which is double the next largest outlay by a developed country, okay? Yet we pay enormously for it, and we get less than terrific care. So there is a lot wrong with healthcare. The insurance companies are far too powerful, obviously. They call the shots on denials of care, on, you know, what you have to do, tests that you can or cannot have. That's a huge problem in healthcare, of course. And so there's a lot wrong with healthcare. Private equity just happens to be one sort of piece of the puzzle. But I think it's an important piece because it really is capitalism on steroids. And people need to know what's going on, but it is extremely stealthy because when you go into your emergency department, it doesn't say at the top of the building sign, the KKR emergency department. You don't know these things are even owned and operated by these, you know, extremely aggressive financiers.
Yeah, so you said, I mean, private equity is private. It's hard to know exactly what's going on. It's hard to know if a PE firm, you know, owns the practice you're going to. And also, private equity firms, they don't always just buy a practice outright. Sometimes they have partial ownership. You talked about, you know, staffing the emergency room. What are some of the ways PE gets involved without, you know, fully owning a practice? And does that make it harder, just the way private equity operates? Does it make it that much harder to sort of figure out what's going on?
Very difficult. So I'm a longtime financial reporter, and even I have difficulty sometimes piecing this stuff together. For instance, if you look at a hospital, you can't tell, does private equity run the emergency department? You know, one of the ways that I have tried to figure that out is by going on the private equity-owned staffing company's websites and looking for job listings.
Oh,
in particular hospitals. So, I mean, it really is like you need to have a Sherlock Holmes to find these things. But it's important. For instance, 65% of physician practice buyouts in the past 5 years have been private equity companies. So we're talking about a big piece of the action here.
I mean, healthcare strikes me as a sector that, I mean, I thought was fairly closely regulated. I mean, there's so much federal money at stake here through Medicare. Are these firms being closely watched by regulators?
You know, there are very few, kind of surprisingly few, kind of rules of the road or rules of regulations about, for instance, staffing or how a healthcare entity operates. For instance, California is the only state in the union that has pretty strict laws about patient-nurse ratios in the hospital, in the ICU. I mean, Massachusetts has a law that does talk about that. But, you know, all the other states, basically, it's up to the operator of the hospital. And there are laws against the corporate practice of medicine that came about because lawmakers realized that pitting a patient against the profit orientation of a for-profit entity was problematic or could be problematic. And so laws on more than 30 states in the country do exist barring the corporate practice of medicine. But no one is enforcing these laws. No one goes after these things.
Regulators and lawmakers are taking some baby steps. At the end of last year, two senators launched a bipartisan investigation into private equity in healthcare. The Federal Trade Commission also recently took the unusual step of suing a private equity-backed anesthesia group in Texas for driving up prices. Then, earlier this month, three federal agencies, the FTC, along with the Department of Justice and the Department of Health and Human Services, announced they're seeking public input as they look into the impact of private equity in healthcare.
So we have these agencies, we have the senators who launched an investigation last year. You have a sense that the needle's kind of moving in the direction of cracking down here?
Well, I would say yes. Certainly, these actions are very encouraging. It does indicate that they're at least these activities are on the radar screen. But, you know, saying you're going to launch an investigation and actually bringing an investigation are two different things. So I am from the show me state. I'm going to wait and watch and hope that something will come of this. Certainly, patients need to have actions taken to protect them because there's really very little protection out there.
What will it mean? What could it mean for the future of healthcare in the U.S. if private equity keeps up this pace?
I think it's going to just become more of a profit center, and you're just going to see a continuation of what we've already seen, which is a decline in patient care and an increase in a very small slice of the population, an increase in the money and profits that they're making. It doesn't really matter, you know, that my fast food operation that I go to in the morning to buy my coffee and my donut is private equity owned, okay? I mean, if I don't like the coffee and if the donut gets smaller and smaller, I can go somewhere else. But your emergency department, your dermatologist. I mean, these are life and death things.
Gretchen, thank you so much for talking to me.
I am delighted anytime, Emily.
Gretchen Morgenson is a senior financial reporter at NBC News. You can find her reporting at NBCNews.com. She's also the author of These Are the Plunderers, How Private Equity Runs and Wrecks America. And that's it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Evan Campbell, Anna Phillips, and Patrick Fort. Our show is edited by Mia Armstrong-Lopez. Alicia Montgomery is Vice President of Audio for Slate. TBD is part of the larger What Next family. TBD is also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. If you're a fan of the show, I have a request for you. Become a Slate Plus member. Just head on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. And we'll be back next week with another episode. I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary, and you can catch me over on Slate Money every Saturday. Thanks for listening.
I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.